Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Minority Report's podcast and digital series. I am your host, Mona Shank, you guys. You know what's up. Happy Friday, everybody. Happy Friday, James. Happy Friday to everyone tuning in or about to tune in. Oh my God, this week, I can't even believe how this week just kind of flew by. At first I was like, oh my God, I have such a busy week. I have like so much stuff to do this week. And then next thing you know, I'm just like, oh, it's Friday already. Oh my God, where did the week go? But you guys, today, I have a very special guest. She has been, I actually almost crossed paths with her 10 years ago. 10 years ago, we had an indirect crossing of the paths when I lived in New York City, since I grew up in New York City. I don't know if you guys know this, but I decided to bring her on because since then, she's been up to very big things. She has been, she directed episodes of of Rami. She directed episodes of Ozark. And I cannot wait to chat with her because she is amazing. I want to give a fantastic intro for this guest because she really is fantastic. She's a Palestinian-American actress, director, producer, and screenwriter. She was named one of Variety Magazine's 10 directors to watch. Yeah, that's right, guys. You are dealing with an OG here. My very talented friend, Shireen Dabbas. Shireen, did I say this right?
Very close.
What did I mess up? Tell me.
What first name was perfect. Just the last name. It's Diabis.
Diabis. But it's D-A-B-I-S though, right?
Yeah. That was just my dad's way of trying to make life a little easier.
Listen, I get it. I wasn't born a Mona. I changed to Mona because my legal name is Mavish. And in high school, when I started here, kids used to call me Mavish.
Oh, wow.
I was like, ooh, I cannot get through high school being called my bitch.
Yeah.
Like this, I'm going to need so much more therapy than I'm going through right now. So much more therapy. But Shireen, welcome. Thank you so much.
You're an animal.
First of all, how are you feeling? I know you're recovering from a cold.
I'm feeling much better. I'm still like on a super early to sleep, early to rise schedule. So I'm a bit of a granny here on the East Coast. It's like 9:15 my time. And
That's true.
I had this time last night. Not quite, but almost.
Oh man, do you have one of those, like, did you have a fever and a cold where you're like having weird dreams in the middle of the night? Like,
you know, I have had some really weird dreams. Really weird dreams. And I was waking up like continually throughout the night. So I would remember all these weird dreams. I would wake up after one and go like, did I really just, like, how random was that dream? Like, why did I dream that?
Is there some truth to those dreams or they're just random?
You know, you're reminding me that I actually dreamt last night that my younger sister met a man. And so I need to call her and tell her because I don't think dreams are always that random. Like, I'm hoping that this is a premonition that I can assure her that someone's coming.
You're the Minority Report for your family. just seeing all the future right before it happens. That's what it is. Shireen, I was reading up about you. Just a little thing that you don't know, you might not know. Back in 2010, I auditioned for May in the Summer for the role of May.
You're kidding me. Wait, did you send in a tape?
No, I went in person. I had a callback for that.
But was I in the room?
No. You were not in the room. I don't remember you in the room.
Was it in LA?
It was in New York.
It was. Okay. Oh my God. That is so crazy.
Yeah. And when the movie came out and I was like, makes total sense. I could never, like, God's name would ever play a Jordanian. That's ridiculous. Like, that is a ridiculous thing. The ridiculous casting. Like, no, you know. And when I saw you, I was like, that makes total sense. Shireen should play that character. She is the right person for this role. So I remember auditioning for that. So yeah, that was our little indirect interaction that we had about 10 years ago. But
That's amazing.
Your Your dad's Palestinian, your mom's Jordanian.
That's right.
And how different, how, it's not that much of a different of a culture.
No, no. I mean, you know, it depends on who you ask, but no, not at all. I mean, okay. if you start asking Palestinians, it's like Palestinian culture can vary so much from city to city within Palestine, like dialects and, you know, and that kind of thing. But no, it's very similar. All of like kind of the Levantine part of the Arab world is super similar.
Khalid, however, is different. Yeah, Khalid is different, though. Khalid is very different.
Khalid is super different. Gulf Arabic, Gulf Arab culture is like a whole different thing. Yes. Yeah.
A lot of flashiness happening, Shireen.
Oh, yes. Flashiness and so many other things, Mona. So many things that make other Arabs and other parts of the region go,
I think it makes even Muslims around the world look at Khalid and go,
Yeah.
What's going on over there?
Yeah. Why? No. Yeah. Yeah.
How much Gucci can one person wear on one day?
I know. And like, how many malls do you need? And like, how big do they need to be?
Yes. And why do you need to drive your car on two wheels when it has four?
Wait, say that again?
Why do you need to drive your car on two wheels when it has four wheels?
right.
Why? Why is that? What is that need about?
Such good questions. I would love them answered.
I mean, listen, I am just as curious as you are about that. You know, I was reading this one thing about you that, you know, you're born and raised Ohio, right? But you're not born there.
No, I was born in Nebraska, raised in Ohio, but we traveled back to Jordan all the time, like almost every summer.
Got it. So you're raised
back and forth.
Where in Ohio, Shireen?
A really small town in the northwestern corner called Salina. It's about an hour north of Dayton.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not the same as in Nashville, Salina, is it?
There's a Nashville, Salina?
There's a Salina in Tennessee, rather.
Oh, there's a Salina, Tennessee. Well, there's also, I believe, a Salina in Kansas, I think. Oh. I've heard, but I think they call it Salina, I've heard. I have to confirm that.
So what makes your parents
name, apparently.
Yeah. What makes your parents go, let's go to this obscure little town?
I know. It's such a strange thing. So my parents just immigrated to the U.S. right before I was born. Ended up in Nebraska because my dad got a residency there. He was right out of med school in Cairo. Got a residency at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska. And then like a lot of immigrant doctors, he was recruited to small town Ohio. And when my parents went to go visit there, like in, like the late 70s, they were like, oh, it's small and it's quaint and it's peaceful and there's no crime, like literally zero crime.
Wow.
That's what they were worried about. And I was like, did you consider that there would be zero culture? They apparently didn't, but they did meet any Arab within 100-mile radius, we knew. So they just, we had our community.
Yeah.
Toledo and Dearborn and, you know.
Right. Dearborn, Michigan has the highest number of Arab population in the country.
That's right. I believe it's the largest Arab population outside of the Middle East.
That's correct. That is correct. Yeah. Dearborn, Michigan is huge. One of the things you wrote about, mentioned in your Wikipedia, is that during the Gulf War in 1990, Secret Service got called to your house?
Yeah, well, they actually got called to my high school. So the Secret Service came to my high school to investigate a rumor that my older sister threatened to kill the president.
How old was your older sister at the time?
17? She was quite threatening to me, but not to really anyone else. By the way, her name is Fatin, She got made fun of quite a lot in school, as you can imagine, but she never changed her name, which is quite awesome.
That's my nickname now, Fatin. No thanks to the pandemic. That's what's happening to me right now. I'm working on a shape called the round shape.
I think it's round. You look pretty amazing. So
thank you. That's the cutoff right here, Shireen.
You can't see from here alone.
Nothing. No, the camera will not pan down. I refuse to pan the camera down, Shireen. So Secret Service gets called because Secret Service, did somebody in the neighborhood put this complaint in?
We don't know anything for certain because it was an anonymous tip that was called in on my sister. But what we think is because she was quite outspoken in her government class, and that she would speak out a lot on behalf of the Iraqi people.
Sure.
And try to kind of give another perspective of what was happening. And she got a lot of pushback and a lot of hostility in that class. So she always, and we always kind of thought it was probably one of her classmates from that class that just decided to call her in, that just thought that, I don't know, that her beliefs were anti-American somehow, that she was, you know, somehow threatening to the country as a 17-year-old.
You know what's disturbing to me? That back then we didn't even have Facebook or Twitter or anything like that to post something like that. So for them to just be like, anonymous tip, let's go check this out. A 17-year-old trying to assassinate the president or trying to, I mean, that's ridiculous.
It's so utterly absurd. And, you know, luckily the principal of the high school was wise enough to just know that it was utterly ridiculous and kept the Secret Service away from my sister and literally said, you will not go anywhere near her. You will talk to me. And if anything happens, I'll take responsibility. Like, that was how certain it was that, which was actually really nice. You know, it's times like, because we experienced such heightened racism in this small town in Ohio during that, you know, that first Gulf War, it's times like that where you really realize who your friends are. So it's kind of, you know, we lost a lot of people we thought were friends and neighbors. And, you know, my dad actually lost a lot of his patients, but then people really emerged out of the woodwork to defend us and to be there and support.
Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting.
There's always that balance, right? It's that always that balance. Like, and I'm glad when people show themselves to be the assholes that they are. I'm like, thank you for letting me know you're an asshole.
Thank you. I never saw that before.
I would not be bringing homemade hummus to your place, so fuck off.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I will no longer explain to you what Palestine is.
Precisely. Don't come to me.
You're from Pakistan?
Exactly. Are you Pakistani? I get the... Do you speak Pakistani? I'm like, first of all, there's no fucking such thing as Pakistani. And second, like, we speak Urdu. We don't speak Pakistani. It's weird. It's weird. People keep saying I'm Middle Eastern. I'm like, please stop saying that. It's South Asian. Please.
Stop it.
We have enough internet to go out there to figure out where Pakistan really is. So please stop it. Identity crisis. Shireen, there must be a lot of that. That must be a lot of identity crisis. You guys must be going through. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's an identity crisis on top of identity crisis.
I mean, at what age were you like, where do I belong? Like, where do I belong? Did you have that kind of a thing? Because I went through that. But
I think I still do.
Say that again?
I said, I think I still do.
I think you still just sort of.
At what age?
Exactly.
Zero through now?
You're like still struggling.
Yeah, no, I really struggled with that throughout my teenage years. And ultimately, I think it's why I do what I do. Like, I think at a certain point, I just became an observer of things and phenomenon and other people and cultures. And I really, because I just didn't feel like I ever really fit in, I sort of took a step back and just, I became an observer. I just started watching people and things and writing things down, noticing things. And so I kind of naturally took that, you know, that position like behind the lens where I could tell a story, where I could watch something unfold. And That's always where I've kind of felt most comfortable, to be honest. And yeah. I think that Gulf War was really a defining moment for me, where prior to that, I really wanted to be all American. You know, yeah. I was like, can I wake up with blue hair and blue hair, but with blonde hair and blue eyes? And, you know, yeah. like that really wanting to fit in. And, yeah. And then the Gulf War happened, and I was like, okay, there's no chance I'm fitting in, and I'm clearly not all American. And I actually swung the total opposite way and just wanted to be Arab. I was like, can we get out of here, please? Like, I don't want to be here. I don't belong here. Why are we here? Right. So, which was great, because I started to appreciate my roots, you know. And then at some point, I merged the two and realized it was quite a privilege to be able to draw from two different places.
Yeah. Did you speak Arabic growing up? Did your parents teach you Arabic?
They did, yeah.
Beautiful.
Arabic at home.
I love that. Did you remember, growing up, like when these conversations, this kind of, you know, you're experiencing this kind of racism at school, your parents are experiencing this kind of racism at work. Are you guys coming at home and having these stories and exchanges and being like, Dad, Mom, I experienced this today? Like, are you guys having these kind of dialogue or...
Not always. I mean, you know, we were, my older sister and I were teenagers at the time. And, you know, I had a lot of experiences at school that I don't think I ever told anybody about, frankly.
Why, Shireen? Why do you think that is? Not sure.
You know, I think it's like your awkward teenage years and, you know, like having a friend come up to me and say, my brother may have to go to war because of you, just like really paled in comparison to what my parents were going through. And I heard them whispering at night, and I know that we were getting death threats and that people were leaving, you know, my dad's office because they didn't want to see an Arab doctor. So I really just sort of kept it to myself. And the things that were bigger deals, we definitely talked about. Like, two of my sisters have been harassed by the FBI. Then, of course, the Secret Service incident, which actually terrified my older sister at the time. She actually got sick with, like, a fever of 104 because she was so scared.
Jesus, poor thing. So did she was just like, you know what, I'm not going to talk about it in government class anymore. I'm not going to defend – I mean, she just –
Not at all. No, she was more – not at all. She was like, this is not going to shut me up. And – she was really scared and I think like didn't go to school the next day and, you know, got like literally got really sick. And then when she recovered, she just went right back to like, that's not going to work.
Wow.
Yeah, which is amazing. She was a senior in high school and like leaving anyway. And now she's like more outspoken than ever.
And is she and what does she do? Is she in the government?
She's a lawyer.
Yes, she is. Is she like
a government? Government.
What kind of lawyer?
What's that?
What kind of law? What kind of law?
Well, actually, funny enough, she's currently working as a contractor for in Illinois. So in a way, it is state government. So it is a little bit, but it's also looking at faults in the system. So she's doing interesting work.
Right. One of our viewers, our avid viewer, James said, the sad thing is that Jordan is a U.S. ally, and the fact that you know, fellow. Immigrants from, you know, who are belong to, you know, our allies are being treated this way. But, you know, what will America be without some racism? Come on now. People.
I know, right?
Come on.
It also, I'm sure, you know, it doesn't help being in a small town where everyone knows, okay, you're Jordanian, but you're Palestinian. Your dad's Palestinian. He's the one that's like kind of the face of the family working as a doctor in town. And then on top of that, his name is Nazi, which is spelled N-A-Z-I-H. So if you've got Nazi in your name and you're Palestinian, things aren't going to go so well in small town Ohio.
Bless his heart. Bless his heart. Okay. That he had, like, had to endure that. You know, it's funny. I have four older brothers. So three of my brothers were brought here by my mom to get settled around when the Gulf War broke out. And my brothers were being told, my brothers were being told that they're Arab and that they are, being watched, they were like, oh, are you guys Arab too? Are you Iraqi? What are you? And they were like, we were like, we're Pakistan. They're like, same thing. You're all the same people. We're like, we've never even been to Iraq, dude. Like, what? Like, what the hell? So everybody's just, if you're brown or dark hair, dark features, you're getting roped in.
Oh yeah, we're all getting lumped into that same category, especially back then. There's maybe a little bit more nuance now, but that's even questionable, especially in certain parts of the country.
Sure, absolutely. So identity crisis. Coming back, I went through identity crisis. My story is a little different than yours because I moved at 15 from Pakistan, so that was very different. So I come here, and
that
then
is very different.
Am I Pakistani? Am I American? But I'm not Pakistani enough for the Pakistanis, and I'm not American enough for the Americans. So, like, you're like in this weird phase. And then after like 10 years of going through that, I was like, fuck it. I was like, I am whatever I want myself to be because that's the beauty of America.
Right.
You know, I mean, you're just like, oh, shit, that's freedom. I'm gonna max this out right now. This is great. America. The first time I heard the name of that movie, I was like, somebody gets it. They get it. This is how we pronounce it. My mom every time would be like, we're going to America. And the first time I heard it, I loved it. The story of America is about a Palestinian mom and her son coming to America. Right, Shireen? Ooh.
Right. Shireen. That's right.
Yeah. You got a little stuck there. Your eyes are closed like you are.
Mary?
Oh, there you are. Okay. Yeah. You were like this.
I was meditating. I had to really think about it. I can't. That movie was such a long time ago. I'm just kidding.
No, it's your first debut feature film.
Yes, it was. It came out in 2009.
Wow. Wow. A lot of good stuff has happened since. So, hey.
Good stuff, but, you know, sadly and interestingly enough, the movie is more relevant today than it was back then.
Yep, 100%. Absolutely. Shireen, you were, I read that you guys went to visit Palestine and you guys were strip searched for 12 hours.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I was like actually a kid at that point. That was like one of my first visits. One of the first visits that I remember because we went back a lot when I was younger. But yeah, well, the first time that I remember going there, we were held at the border. We were crossing through the Allenby border crossing, which is the crossing between Jordan and the West Bank. And that's the crossing that Palestinians have to go through to go into the West Bank. And so, we were held for 12 hours. My younger sisters who were like babies and infant, like we were all strip searched. My mom's makeup was confiscated. Our electronics were confiscated. My dad was screaming at the soldiers. They were screaming at him. And I just remember, like, I was like an 8-year-old, I think, at the time. And I was like, I really remember just like looking at my dad going like, I don't know if he's going to die right now. And then when we finally, like after 12 hours and like my younger sisters were like wailing with hunger and we finally like were driving into Jerusalem. And I remember poking my head out the window and just like taking in the warm breeze and thinking, man, people really don't like us.
Mm. Yeah.
Sadly, as an 8-year-old, you know, really thinking, people don't like us.
Yeah.
So it was a really formative experience.
Yeah, formative to say the least, more like traumatic. Holy
that,
shit.
That
like, formative is like a nice way of saying, oh my God, they fuck with my head at that age. Like, what? That's crazy. When you say strip search, like what? They take you? Did they strip search your mom too?
I remember my recollection is they strip searched everyone, my mom and dad and all of us. So it was literally, it's humiliation, you know, which is what they often do. So yeah, everything came off.
So you're 8 years old and what? They take you to a special room with like a lady bodyguard, like lady guard, and then she's like, okay, everybody take your clothes off because we don't want any bombs underneath there. Let's go, people.
Yeah, pretty much. You're taking, I mean, even to this day, like I was just in Palestine in October, and when I was flying out, you know, they have a special room for Arabs. It's the VIP room. And it's where literally like just everything is searched. Like they pull out every piece of lint from your coin purse. Everything is taken out. I remember at one point, the security person took out a chocolate bar and just stared at it for like, it felt like a whole minute. And I just was looking at her and I was like, do you want some? Like, chocolate. And then I was taken into like a separate room and just like feel, they don't make you take your clothes off, but they will feel the inside of your trousers, like the seams of your pants, like everything. They'll search your hair. They made me take my bra off. I started to lose my temper a little bit around the bra. Like I took it off like I was stripping. I just started going like this. Like, is this what you want? I was like, I can't. I have to try to inject some humor into this because I'm really starting to get angry right now. So,
and that's every time, Shireen. Every time you cross the border, every time you have to go through this.
It is almost, yeah, on the way. It's different every time, but every time is, you know, every time is something special.
So what happened? So this is from Jordan to West Bank. So when you leave West Bank to go back to Jordan, are you going through the same thing? No.
Well, the thing that I'm talking about actually happened at the Tel Aviv airport. So I now often fly in.
Oh.
Going through the Jordanian border, I will avoid the border that Palestinians who have ID cards have to go through, because that's the one where they give you the hardest time.
Sure.
And I'll sometimes go through another. The northern border is a little bit easier, and then flying into Tel Aviv can sometimes be easier, though I'm usually held at the airport for anywhere from 2 to 4 hours.
Every time?
Pretty much every time. This last time I went, I was utterly shocked that it was the first time in my life that I got straight in, and I was like, I don't know what just happened.
I think it was the chocolate bar, sure.
I think it might have been.
You need to bring more chocolate bars. Well, the Kit Kat?
Right. Chocolate.
Was it a good bar? What was it? Good bar, Kit Kat?
Only the best.
Toblerones, baby. That's the way to go. Because they also look like pyramids, you know? It's just like, here you go.
Right.
That little pyramid action going on. Unbelievable. This is just ridiculous. So crazy. I know that you've been up to a lot of really great stuff. I mean, my goodness. You were, you co-executive produced Quantico, right?
What did I do on that? I wasn't a co-executive producer on that. I was a producer.
You were a producer on that?
Okay. I was a writing producer on that for the first season.
Got it.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah, okay. So you do Quantico. What was your experience like working on Quantico?
Quantico was a little bit nutty. Quantico was it was a very interesting, challenging experience, let's just say, especially working on the first season, because I think it took a while to kind of really figure out what the show was and what it was going to be. So it was a bit of a process, and being in that writer's room was exceptionally challenging. It literally felt like, you know, it felt a little bit like being held hostage.
It was challenging because you guys were trying to navigate your way and figure out what, like, the...
There were so many pieces of the story. I mean, literally, like, I would leave the writer's room and I would just have, like, a massive headache because it would be like doing story math. It's like doing story math. I felt like we were doing physics all day long because there were so many characters and so many storylines and so many pieces to interweave. And we just had like all of the story up on the board. And it was just like, you know, it was a lot of, I mean, the writer's room can be super fun, but this show in particular was really challenging just with all of its moving pieces. And the showrunner is actually a super brilliant guy. I mean, like, he's just like really smart and he moves really fast and he talks like super fast. He talks so fast that you can barely keep up. And I literally would have to record sometimes the writer's room because I'd be like, I don't know what he's saying because he's talking so fast.
Yeah.
And it took a while for me to really get into the rhythm of how quickly he moved.
Sure.
And it was I'm a bit more chill.
Yeah, well, you grew up in Ohio.
Yeah, you could say that's why. Maybe.
I grew up in New York. When I moved out to LA, people were like, you talk too fast.
That's really funny.
They were like, Bonnie, you talk too fast. So I have to constantly slow myself down because I'm also always running out of breath because I'm trying to, like,
Right.
Everything. And my brain is, my mouth is like, I cannot catch up to your thoughts. Please slow down. Please.
Right.
Slow down.
Right.
Please.
So. You speak at the perfect speed for me. It's good.
Thank you.
20 years now. So I feel like I'm talking like he was like New York on crack.
Oh, shit. Like, okay.
Yeah. Like really turn up the dial on a New Yorker and then you've got the showrunner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not all showrunners, just this one.
I mean, you've been in New York. I mean, you've been in New York City for how long now?
Yeah, 20 years. I moved here in September of 2001.
Woo!
Literally days before 9/11.
Wow. Did they talk about your house then too? They're like, hi, what did you move to New York City?
No, it's really funny because by the time I got to New York, I was like, no one knew that I was Arab. Like I would walk down the street and people would look at me. They didn't know that I was Arab. So it was like such a different experience because in small town Ohio, everyone knew our business.
Sure.
And everyone knew, you know, we were Arab. But I got here and suddenly I was experiencing a whole different kind of racism, which was more like the fly on the wall kind of racism, mm-hmm. where people feel comfortable being racist in front of you because they don't realize that you're a person of color.
I think those are some of the fun ones.
Yeah, how could she be a person of color?
That's right. I when I lived in New York City when September 11th happened, and I grew up in New York, so for me, it was pretty in my face. People would come and ask me, they're like, you don't have any terrorists in your family, do you? Like, do you guys have any, like, do you know anything? I mean, do you agree with what Osama bin Laden did? What the fuck are you talking about?
Unbelievable.
Like, because I'm a lot browner than you are, Shireen. So I was definitely like being approached with like stupid ass questions. Like, oh, do you want to, you think, have terrorists ever tried to recruit you? I'm like, no, I'm too attractive. They don't hire attractive people. So, no, they did not ever come for me. You know, they come for, I'm not even a virgin. They're never going to hire me. Are you kidding? This is never going to happen. It's just not in the cards for me, Shireen. It's just not in the cards for me.
Yeah, I totally get it. I understand.
I mean, it's ridiculous. So you're in New York City, and how much, I mean, you must come to LA all the time. What is like, why the preference of living in New York City versus in Los Angeles?
You know, I just, in New York, I feel like I live in the world. It's just between all of the languages spoken and all of the cultures and just, I feel like it's like a microcosm of the world. Whereas in LA, it feels so much more homogenous and it feels a lot more American to me. Not that that's a bad thing, but I miss a little bit the diversity of like the languages that you hear walking down the street. I also miss the people. Like I go to LA and it's like, I mean, look, I love how relaxing it is and it's peaceful. And like, I love nature and the mountains. And all, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Parts of it. But I miss walking and I miss people, you know. I feel like walking in LA is so, I mean, I remember when I lived there when I was working on the L Word, and I would walk places and people would look at me like I was crazy. Walking or jogging in Jordan, you know, people look at me like I'm crazy.
That's right. Can you as a woman go jogging in Jordan? What is that like?
You can, but you definitely risk being hit by a car. Oh, it's not very, pedestrian or jogging friendly, and you know the and traffic can be super chaotic and all of that. So and you definitely will get a lot of stares. You'll get a lot of people looking at you.
Harassment, catcalls.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure.
Because in Pakistan,
featured in my second feature film, actually.
Because in Pakistan, if I go running in the streets, people will be commenting on my titties and my ass. Like, that's straight up.
Right. There you go. That's.
They're like, titties looking good. I'm like, thank you, sir. You know, it's like. like bouncing it out. Now, as you get older.
Are people that, like, in your face about it? Like, that would be so I am. It's not I am. I don't know. Do you guys use that? Is that, like, a term that's.
What is
we use than just the Arab world, Ayyab, which Ayyab is like a term that we use that means shame, like shameful, but it's just shameful. Like it's not just like you've shamed yourself. Like when you've done something that's Ayyab, you've literally shamed all of your people.
I see.
So you're responsible for your tribe, for your family, for your people. And when you do something Ayyab, it's like a colossal shame. Like, you've shamed everyone.
Really? With us, it's more like haya. Haya means sharam, like, or sharam. Sharam means shame. So it would be more like haya karo, meaning like be shameful. Like, what are you doing? What are you out there, like, you know, walking around with like your titties bouncing and your ass bouncing? Like, I got good titties. What do you want? Like, God gave them to me. People pay for these in LA. Come on. You know?
Exactly.
It's like, come on, man.
I don't know why.
It's, you know, it's shame, right? It's the woman's body is so sexualized that
It's the woman's body. I mean, it's unbelievable. So fucking taboo. Like, I mean, the thing between a woman's legs, like, that is the family honor right there. Like, it is, it's hard to believe that in this day and age, we're still dealing with this. It's still very much the case.
Patriarchy, Shireen. Patriarchy.
Yeah.
Blame it on patriarchy. It's everywhere. Blame it on patriarchy. Honestly, I am just tired of family's honor constantly being put in a woman's vagina, because once you put it up there's not a lot of room for anything else to go in there. So you need to take the family honor out, because my vagina's too full. It's too full. It's heavy. It's full. I'm walking. I'm exhausted.
It's a lot. It's a lot for that poor vagina to carry, you know? Like, it can't carry the shame of all of our people, too. Like, come on.
You can't even get a tampon in with that amount of in there. Like, you understand? Like, you have to, like, I can't even get a tampon in here. Like,
just like, can all of you get out of there already?
Oh, it's like, geez, is there a string that I can just pull it out, just like a tampon? Kind
of pull the fucking patriarchy out of your vagina.
You just yank that shit out, man.
Where's that fucking yank string?
Right. I think there should be like an ad for like a fucking. Like a family honor tampon, like, just
nip that honor in the bud, man. Get it the fuck out. It doesn't belong there.
Fucking exhausted, Shireen. I'm fucking exhausted of this shit. Shireen, how do you feel about this kind of this family honor thing I'm talking about? It's prevalent in South Asian culture. It's prevalent fucking everywhere. But it definitely in South Asian and Middle Eastern culture, especially predominantly Muslim countries, there is this thing where women are just constantly made to bear this fucking burden where we didn't even ask for it. Right. Do you feel, even in communities here, Middle Eastern communities here, South Asian communities here, I definitely know about South Asian communities. Do you feel in Middle Eastern communities that is still a very big part of the conversation, very big mentality that goes around?
I think so. Yeah. I think it's, you know, it might be a little bit more subtle than back home, but sometimes not. Sometimes it's not even more subtle. Sometimes, in fact, it's magnified because people immigrated to the States decades ago, and they haven't realized that there's been progress in our part of the world. They're actually stuck in a bit of a time bubble, like in, you know, Palestine, like the village, you know, the tiny village of Palestine in circa 1974, 75 or something. So it's like this village mentality from the 70s that has not progressed.
Yep. You know,
and also, I just feel like it's so challenging when, you know, we come from places where there's just so much work to do in our own cultures, but we're so busy.
Yes.
Like, you know, fighting outside, you know, imperialism, colonization, the enemy, like occupation, like, you know, God knows what threats from the outside, that there's just no ability to even look at our own progress.
Yes.
You know what I mean? To really like do any work internally on our own situation.
Shireen, don't you feel if the men in our societies, the toxic patriarchy that has dominated and continues to dominate and dictate the narrative, if the allies, the male allies, would step up and be like, listen, guys, this shit ain't working. This isn't working.
Yeah.
We need to treat our women equal to what's happening to us, because we need our societies to progress, right? Do you feel that is happening here and back home?
No, I don't. I don't. I mean, you know, sadly, if it is, I don't know about it, but I don't think it is. I have to wonder. I don't know why. Why do you think that is?
I feel one of the factors is what you just said. They moved at in the 60s or 70s or even 80s, and they're just stuck in that while Pakistan has moved on, Jordan has moved on, even Palestine has moved on, but they're still stuck in that mindset. But I feel also in America, I think it's about identity. It's about saying, we're going to hold on to this for dear life.
Right, right. How
fucked up it is. Don't ask me to look at it. Don't ask me to look at the fucked up stuff, because you're asking me to shake my identity, and I don't know who I am if you ask me to shake my identity.
Right, right. No, that's a great point. I think that's really, really true. And I think that people do really hold on to their identities even more once they've left. And, you know, in Palestine, just given, like, you know, the homeland is gone, basically, and people are just still clinging to who they are and where they came from and their past and the hope of return. And, you know, because what else is there? Because the future is so, the present is so bleak, and the future seems even bleaker. So, you know, it's like, and how do you even organize internally? How do you even like put a call out for our allies, our male allies, to even do anything when, you know, when you look at like a culture like Palestine or a country like Palestine, where people are, like, the men have been so humiliated. They've been, like, completely emasculated, and, like, they're living on their knees, and now you want them to, you know, so it's like, I do wonder why our male allies here, I sometimes feel like we have a hard time speaking out about some of our internal issues, like societal issues, because we're so criticized. Outsiders criticize our culture so much that sometimes it makes it harder for us to then be critical of our own cultures and of our own societies. And I feel like that's also another reason why people sort of shield themselves with, like, I'm going to focus on the occupation. I'm going to focus on this. Let's not talk about these other things, like the way women are still being, you know, honor killed and whatever else is happening. We're going to brush these things under the rug, domestic violence and, you know, things are real and that are happening. We haven't gotten there yet to the point where we're ready to take out those taboos and look at them and go, you know what? What you're doing is wrong, but what we're doing is also wrong.
That's right. That's right. Which, I mean, you know, that's the great thing, right? That's the great thing about you living in America and I living in America. We can have this conversation. I can talk about this in my stand-up. I can talk about it on my live streams. You can go make a film about it. You can have a live stream and talk about this thing, you know, or have a panel to be like, we want to have this discussion, right?
Right.
Right. This is my take on it. I get a lot of shit sometimes from fellow Pakistanis and fellow Muslims even, because I make fun of the dumb shit within the culture. And they don't like it. Especially, it's crazy, because when I make fun of terrorists, people get mad at me. And I was like, no, why are you getting mad? That's not pertaining to you. Why are you getting upset at that? I'm just making fun of a dude who wants to blow himself up because he's going to get 72 pussies in heaven.
Right.
What a horrible deal. Virgin? Horrible. Who wants that shit? I want 72 Chippendales in my heaven. Are you shitting me right now? I want gyrating on me, know all the moves. Like, fuck it.
Some experience. Yeah, exactly.
Hello. Stupid. They don't like it. They don't like it. I get a lot of shit from them, especially Pakistani.
Well, that's surprising to me. Do you think men get the, do you think your male counterparts get the same kind of shit? Because a lot of them also criticize Islam and the culture and, you know, terrorism. Yeah.
Well, they don't. Not on the level that I do, because I'm a woman.
Right.
How dare you, as a woman? Oh, as a guy, you are very bright. Let me hear what you have to say.
Right.
I would say the same shit and be like, oh, you self-hating Muslim, you self-hating Pakistani. And it's like, I am none of the above. I'm actually just pointing out, just like I point out the fucked up shit in American culture, I point out the fucked up shit in Pakistani or Muslim culture.
Yeah.
My job. Number one, I'm an artist.
Right.
Everything else is secondary. Right? Number one, like, that's where I come from. I'm a comic, first and foremost. I'm going to make fun of anything and everything. So, like, fucking, you know.
You got to.
Take a fucking deep breath. Like, seriously. Yeah. deep breath, you know? But yeah, I feel like there's also this thing about like, but you're a woman, like, you know, when you do that, then, when you make fun of our culture, that means you give license to everyone to make fun of us. And I'm like, so what? If you're just talking about the fucked up shit, then we'll just talk about the fucked up shit. How do you fix something if you don't even acknowledge it?
Right.
How do you fix something like that? Shireen, do you feel, as a filmmaker of Palestinian and Jordanian background, do you always feel like your films always need to have a topic or an issue it has to deal with? Do you always feel like it always has to be something about that? Like it has to speak something of that narrative or kind of counter a narrative? Like, do you always feel that kind of pressure? You can't just make a rom-com like Bridesmaids, you know?
I do feel that, but I don't see it as pressure. I see it as responsibility, and I see it as, it's why I became a filmmaker. Like, so for me, it's like, I know other people might see that as like the burden of responsibility, and I totally get that. Like, no one should have to feel that they're responsible to tell a counter narrative. But I actually became a filmmaker because I wanted to do that. Because I was like, I don't see myself represented. I don't see my people represented. I don't see this narrative anywhere. I want to give voice to this. I want to tell this narrative. And I think, I mean, you know, film and television storytelling is just so powerful, you know, and comedy is so powerful. I mean, comedy to further like social change is really, really powerful.
Yep.
So I'm all for really taking the issues that I care about at whatever moment in time and really like finding a way to either infuse them into a story or tell a story about them, you know, that's engaging and that's like, that can really be like a part of the zeitgeist, that can be part of, you know, what people see as like, okay, this is the conversation now. I can contribute to something, you know?
Mm-hmm. When you became a filmmaker, was that something that came as a shock to your family? Because, you know, immigrant parents, they expect you to become a doctor, an engineer, a lawyer. Like, those are very...
No, it's not true. You know? I know, it's so cliche, but it's so true. Like, my... When I first told my dad I wanted to be a filmmaker, I was young. I was, like, in my teens. And he basically said... he said, you can't be a filmmaker. You're Arab. No one's going to care what you have to say.
Yep.
I was like, way to go, Dad. Super encouraging. Thanks for that one. He really believed that. He really, really believed that at that time, that no one would care what I had to say. And that's really sad for him that he believed that, you know? And luckily times have changed and some people care.
I think a lot of people care now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it definitely came as a shock, but yet it didn't, because I started making home movies. I mean, like really, really hilarious, bad home movies when I was 12.
Yeah.
Like horror films in the cornfields of Ohio, bad. And it wasn't a huge surprise when I told my parents, but when I told my dad I got to Columbia Film School, he was like, is there any chance you can go to Columbia Law School?
Wow. Of course he did.
I was like, no, Dad, there's really not. But thanks for asking. Bye.
Not too fucking shabby getting in Columbia Film School. Excuse me.
I was hoping for a little bit more approval.
Yeah.
That's why I do everything I do, Mana. I want my dad's approval. I've just been working and working for him to just be like, very proud of my first film, though.
What about your mom? Is she very supportive? Your sisters?
My mom and sisters are amazing. My mom is super proud. Yeah. And my mom is definitely very supportive.
She's
not hesitant. You know, for her, again, it was like the arts are a hobby. Like, you know, you need something else.
Yeah.
But once she saw that I could actually make a living, she was like, oh, okay.
Listen, the moment money comes into the picture, the game changes.
Totally.
It's not a hobby anymore. Oh, you're making money. Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, my family.
Do something now.
My mom is just like, I want to buy this bag and I saw these shoes and I want to buy. So it's like, okay. All right. You weren't, my family has never been supportive of anything. Like nobody in my family. I have four older brothers.
No.
Never. Fuck that. They were just like, what are you doing? My brothers refuse to watch my comedy. They refuse to come to my show. No.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Nothing. But I, you know what? It's great.
You know, you got to, you keep, you do what you do you.
Exactly. Shane, for me, it's great because by the time my special comes out, I'm like golden. So they haven't seen the shitty parts of my comedy.
That's awesome. I like your style.
But the entire time they'll be like, oh my God, my sister was so talented. I'm like, you have no idea. I was eating shit for like 10 years. Like, oh my God, I sucked for so long. And now I'm finally good. So holy shit, this is, but that's amazing though. Like, is your dad now more accepting and embracing of it? And it's just like, no, Shireen is established filmmaker.
No, you know, I think he's still really surprised that I make a living. He's still seriously very, like, I kind of feel like he doesn't understand.
Yeah. is this a thing in Jordanian Palestinian culture to be like, oh my God, you're 25 and you're not married? Oh my God, that's it. You are dead. You're basically a fucking corpse. Like,
Oh girl, in Arabic culture, it's like you're chsara. You're like too bad.
Oh, the daggers, Shireen, the daggers.
I know, we even have a room to label it. It's, oh my God. It's so, and then, oh my God, if you don't have a child, if you don't want to have a child and bring a child into this crazy, insane, fucked up, upside down world.
Exactly.
That is like, how could you not, how selfish are you?
Right. What is your purpose here exactly, Shireen and Motoshek?
Exactly.
Why are you even here? What are you going to do with all that uterus? Oh, I'm sorry. The patriarchy and the honor, the family honor is in there. So I can't
really straighten that out.
Yeah. The family honor in there. So shove a kid out of that. So I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Did your family kind of pressure you in your 20s and in your 30s to be like, get married, find somebody?
Yes. 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 And interestingly enough, though, you know, I identify as queer, and I was with women throughout all my 20s, and that was awkward because I really couldn't have a kid with a woman.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. I mean, you could. You go to a sperm bank. You could.
Right. But not in the way that they want me to.
Of course not. Yeah. The whole penetration process. Yes.
Yeah. That was not. I mean, it's possible, but not in the way that they want.
Sure, exactly. It's just like, Dad, it's a turkey baster. Leave me alone. Okay, leave me alone. What age were you when you came out to your family and you're like, I'm queer? Like, and what was that like?
Well, I, you know, I never came out to my dad, actually. He still doesn't know.
Go back and edit this, Shireen.
I don't think he doesn't watch a lot of stuff, so I'm not too worried. Exactly. But if he's listening, sorry, Dad.
Shireen, I think if you came up with a kid today, he wouldn't even care. He's just like, you have a kid. I think it's good. Let's do this.
I'm married to a man now, so you know that's all he'll care about. Again, super awkward. So I'm like, I'm seen as a straight person in the world, which I'm not and don't want to appear to be. But anyway, when I came out to my mom, it was like, oh my God, it was like so dramatic. I mean, my mom was like, oh my God, Shireen. Oh my God.
Whoa.
Shireen, this is so stupid.
What?
Yeah. All this beauty, all this talent out the window. Like, it was like literally, I felt like she was like giving my eulogy at my funeral or something. I was like, really? My talent is gone too? Like, when did that happen?
Yeah, apparently that happens. Like, when you become queer or you are queer, apparently that your talent disappears.
You need to be straight to be talented. I didn't know. I mean,
hey, my family does. I'm straight and they still don't believe I'm talented. So it doesn't fucking, you can't win, Shireen. You can't fucking win. That's
you
what
can't
I'm
win.
Can't fucking win. That's wow, man. Wow. So you're married to a man, and now did you marry a white guy?
No, I'm an Iranian.
Oh, okay.
I'm married from the region, girl.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Iranian. What's up? Okay.
Yeah, what's up?
Did Did you guys have a Iranian style wedding, or was it like a quiet wedding?
It was, you know, I wanted a quieter wedding. Let's just say that. Yeah. I kind of wanted a really quiet, like an eloping kind of a wedding.
Okay.
But no, we had a lovely wedding. It was family, like family, closest family and friends. It was super chill. It was sort of bohemian. It was a little, you know, we had our Iranian sofra, and it was really.
I love that. There was no dabke. There's no dabke dance.
Oh, there was spontaneous dabke for sure.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, there was Arabic and Iranian music. Yeah, we had and American. I mean, it was like a whole hodgepodge.
Love dabke.
It was fun.
Especially those like hot Palestinian guys. Like I was like, oh honey, goodness. Yes. Do the dabke. Yes, I'm about that life. Okay.
It's really beautiful to watch people do the dabke. I mean, it's a really beautiful. I mean, I can barely do it. Like, but when I see people
who are
amazing, I'm just like,
it's hard.
It looks when people do it well, they make it look so easy, mm-hmm. and then you do it, and you're just like, okay, I can I just belly dance because I'm a little better at that. Just a little bit, not much.
Dude, my knees would blow out. Are you shitting me?
I know, right?
That one going down. I'm not coming back up. I go down. I am not coming back up.
I'm lifting you back up. I hear you. I'm with you. Yeah.
With us, it's more like the light changing, like light bulb changing dances for us. So it's a little, you're not really getting down to it so much. So that's good. You know, so yeah, if you have bad knees, you're good. Like you're good. Like it's all up here.
You're totally, yeah, you're fine. No problem.
You're fine. I mean, my God. I know that we are on a limited time. So I wanna get into you directing the amazing Rami. I love Rami Youssef. Rami has been on my Minority Reports live shows at the Comedy Store. I have done podcasts with him. He's just so wonderful. He's so wonderful. What was that like? Did they contact you? Did Rami was just like, Shireen, come in, you know, direct an episode. What was that like?
Yeah, well, Rami and I have a mutual friend who introduced us. And so, Rami and I were in touch directly from the very beginning. And he wanted me to come on board and direct a block of episodes from the very beginning. And he always knew that he wanted me to direct the episodes about the women and that sort of standalone episodes. And it was amazing. In season one, I did 4 episodes and, you know, was really a part of, the creative conversations around some of them. And it was really so much fun to be part of a show that to me felt like coming home.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just like, it's my culture. It's my family. It's my people. It's my language. Like, you know, Arabish, somewhere between Arabic and English, where it's just like dual language and Arab American, and it was so much of what I could relate to, and so it was really amazing to be a part of kind of the first show of its kind, and to help kind of, you know, birth it into the world, and
it's
been really exciting. I directed 4 episodes in season 1 and 2 episodes in season 2.
Did you direct the one about the mom going through the crisis?
Where I did.
French guy, and she's smoking, and she's like, oh my God, I'm a liberated French woman, and oh, I'm gonna go this way. I love that episode so much. Honestly, of all the episodes, I thank you for telling me that you directed it, and it makes me so happy that a woman directed it, because you can just tell it has that woman touch on it. But I remember watching that episode and being like, yes, thank you for showing that one. That's important.
Yeah. Oh, that's really, I love hearing that, because that I love that episode. And I always loved, like, when I, the moment I got that script, I loved it. I knew that script was really special, and I knew that episode was going to be really special. And that episode reunited me with the great Palestinian French actress, Tiam Abbas, who I've now worked with like 4 different times feature films and in Rami seasons 1 and 2.
Yes.
And so it was amazing to like reunite with her. And then we shot at White Castle, which was like, you know, it felt like a throwback to Amrika, because Amrika, you know, there's the main character ends up getting a job at White Castle. So it was just a really amazing experience that really, like I said, like kind of brought me back to my origins as a filmmaker.
You know, Shireen, one thing, I love the second season. Of course, I love the first season. One thing, you know, I noticed about the characters is that every character has its own distinct backstory. And Rami really kind of takes the time to kind of go in and delve in and try to really make them multidimensional. So it's not like just all Rami, but he also goes and explores the backstories of these different characters. It's funny because the uncle played, the guy who plays Laith Nakhli, who plays the uncle, is my former acting classmate from New York.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like, wait.
Yeah.
What is happening right now? This is amazing. And he's so great. He's so talented. He's so great. One thing, you know, I was noticing, and please tell me if, like, you know, one thing I noticed about the first season and the second season is that the sister never gets laid.
I know. Girl, I tried. I mean, look, I
can we get her laid, Shireen?
I'm with you. I think that needs to happen. It's really funny because I actually protested in season one that she was a virgin at all. I was like, really? Like, isn't that kind of what's expected?
Not even a finger? Like, not even two? Like, come on. Like, nothing?
I know. Well, she did get hot and heavy, and she really wanted to go all the way. But that guy, like, I mean.
Fetishizing her?
That was the story. There was a lot of back and forth on that episode in particular. And there, you know, it's interesting in television because you have so many different voices chiming in. You know, you've got the creator and the showrunner, and sometimes the writer is a different person. And on that episode, it was a different person. So it was like, those are three people. And then you've got the producers, and then you've got the studio executives, and you've got the network executives. So you've got a lot of layers of people. And by the time I came on board as a director, they had been through numerous iterations of that script.
Wow.
Some of which were like, no bueno. Like, no, you don't want to, you know, there's a lot of confusion around how Arab women should be portrayed. You know, like, it was almost like you could tell there were too many voices contributing to that particular story.
Yeah. Yeah.
So ultimately, though, I think we landed on something that worked well. I'm with you. Let's get her laid.
I was like,
everybody's
getting laid. I was like, okay, Rami's getting laid the most, and I get it. He's getting so much puss. Good for him. Congrats. I was like, but what about the sister? Let's get the sister get laid. Come on.
I know.
Just a little bit. Like, you know. Right. Mahershala Ali, who's in the second season and does a phenomenal job because he is a phenomenal actor. I remember being at a studio meeting and this guy named Mahershala Ali comes and sits next to me. I don't know who he is, but I hear people walking around and whispering to each other. So I'm just like, maybe he's somebody big. I just don't know because I'm an idiot. I never watched House of Cards. I didn't know. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, hey man, how you doing? He's like, good. I'm like, Mahershala Ali. So that's a Jewish and a Muslim name? So which one are you? And he starts laughing. He's like, are you a New Yorker? I'm like, yeah, can't you tell? He goes, yeah. For 30 minutes, we were both waiting for our meeting. For 30 minutes.
That's amazing. Oh, my God.
His entire journey, how he converted to Islam.
Oh, wow.
Told me the entire backstory.
That's amazing.
And I was just like, oh, man, that is such a great. He was like, I was a young actor. I was lost. I was looking at the Baha'i faith. I was looking at a bunch of different religions. And he goes, I remember being at a bodega in New York City, and you know, and they were, so it's Friday and they're going to do the prayer, the Friday prayers. And I'm like, hey, can I, oh, Shireen, can you hear me? Oh, there you are.
I can hear you. Yeah.
And he's like, yeah.
Frozen.
He's like, long story short, I go to the masjid and I hear the prayers and he goes, and I start crying and I don't know why I'm crying.
Wow.
And he's like,
wow.
I go home that night and I can't stop crying and I can't stop thinking about how touched I was when I hear the prayers.
Wow.
So he shows up to the bodega again and he goes, hey, are you going to the masjid again? I wanna come. And they're like, okay, all right, dude. All right, you can join us. And then they turn and looked at him, the guy who took him, and he goes, you're not Muslim, are you? He goes, no. He goes, but I'm looking at different faiths. And I was like, you know, I heard the prayers and it really touched my heart. And he goes, would you like to convert? And he goes, yes. So he says,
that quick. Wow.
And then he gets up and he's about to leave. And he was like, say that again.
That's profound.
It's so profound. So profound, you know. And he ended up marrying a black Muslim woman from Chicago whose father was the head imam of a masjid there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Are you raised Muslim, Shireen? Are you guys Muslim?
No, I was raised Christian. My parents are raised Christian.
Okay. Is that Coptic?
Coptic Christianity is really in Egypt. In Palestine, it's a lot of Greek Orthodox and Roman Catholic.
Oh.
Which is what my parents are.
So you guys are raised like Greek Orthodox?
Yeah. Yeah. Greek Orthodox and Catholic.
Hardcore, dude. I was married to a
Greek. Super religious growing up, so it wasn't a big part of my upbringing.
Okay.
Yeah, and now I'm actually a Buddhist practitioner.
Oh, love that. Love that. I was married to a Greek man in New York.
You were married to a Greek man in New York?
I was married to a Greek man in New York, and he was very Greek Orthodox. Every morning, he would wake up and cross himself. He had his whole shrine and everything, and he would come to the mosque with me, and I would go to the Greek church with him. It was quite the experience, to say the least.
Yeah, that's wow.
Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, I love going to the Greek church because they're so beautiful. But I would sit there because I'm an asshole. I'd be like, because the entire sermon would be in Greek, and I'm like, that's Greek to me. And he's like, shut up.
And he's like, yeah, it is.
He's like, hello. I'm just like, I'm just here for the food. I'm like, can I just get some good food?
It is really good food.
Yeah, because Easter is a very big deal, right? In Greek Orthodoxy.
Huge, yes. And it's my mom's favorite holiday, even though my mom always thought the Greek Orthodox were a little too strict for her.
Yeah.
But Easter has always been her favorite holiday.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Easter is a very big deal. So I would just sit there and just like wait for like the delicious soups that they would make and all the yummy food and the baklava and all that. And I'm just like, I don't care. I listen to the sermon. I get free food. I don't care. I will listen to this. I don't know what they're saying, but I'm sure it's beautiful. My God. Shireen, how has the pandemic been for you? Are you working on any projects? What's going on?
It's been it's been a really highly creative time. It really like turbo boosted a lot of things, like a lot of, you know, just development. Everyone just wanted to develop. And so suddenly it was like, okay, let's turn the dial up on everything I'm developing. So it's been just a lot of writing, a lot of Zoom meetings, a lot of Zoom pitches, a lot of Zoom.
Okay. Is there such a thing? Okay, are you experiencing Zoom exhaustion? It's a real thing.
Yeah. Zoom fatigue, yeah, it's a thing. It's a real thing. I'm like, you do everything on Zoom these days. It's like literally everything. I'm taking French classes on Zoom. I'm doing my meditation classes on Zoom.
Oh, wow.
I'm taking an acting class on Zoom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I've been taking acting classes on Zoom. So I tape it, I send it in, and then they give you the critique. They play it on, and then they tell you, you're like, oh, you suck. Go back to stand-up.
Go back to square one. Do that again.
Go back to stand-up comedy. Exactly. Are you acting also, Shireen, now? Are you acting in your stuff? Are you acting in other projects? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a little while since I've focused on the acting and since I've done it, frankly. But I'm totally open, and I've been exercising that muscle now for, you know, I mean, I've never really stopped, so...
Yeah,
and I intend to continue to act in my own work when it's appropriate, and you know, when there's a role and when it's appropriate. So yeah, I'm excited to do it. Yeah, and there's always like little opportunities that come about here and there. And
yeah. You say highly creative. Do you have a film you're working on right now? Like, what are you working on?
I do. Yeah, I have a couple of feature films that I'm working on. Two films that I'm working on. One that's actually set here in the U.S. and then one that's set in Palestine.
Okay.
And then I have three shows that I'm in different stages of development on. One that I'm actively pitching. Well, two that I'm Well, one and a half. One that I'm actively pitching and another one that I'm getting very close to going out with.
Got it. Got it. So I know you also directed Ozark.
Yes. That was amazing.
That must have been. How many episodes did you direct of Ozark?
I did two episodes.
You directed two episodes. Yeah. And what was that like? Like, holy shit. I mean, Ozark's quite the show.
It's, yeah, it's super intense. But also really, really kind of awesome. Like, I've always been such a massive fan of Jason Bateman. Yeah, been watching him since I was a kid.
He lives in my neighborhood.
Oh, really?
I see him in my Whole Foods.
Guy. He's really, really lovely.
Yes, he is.
And he actually really taught me something I think really valuable as a director, which is not to take myself so seriously. Because I can do that. I tend to do that when I'm directing, you know, it's just like, oh my God, there's so much responsibility and there's so much to do.
Yeah.
And I was actually quite nervous that the first day that I was going to be directing him, because he had just directed The Block right before me. So I was like, oh, you know, he just directed himself, which was awesome, by the way. I got to watch him direct himself. I mean, sure. That was like a serious masterclass in acting and directing at the same time. And then, so then I was directing The Block after him. And the first day he showed up to set, he walks up to me and I was like, hey, Jason, how are you? And he was like, I'm great. Do you know why? Because all I have to do today is act. On over to you. And he did this little bow. And I was like, I love you.
He's a sweetheart, isn't he? He's the same probably way he's on screen as he is off screen. You can just tell that.
He is just constantly cracking jokes. He's such a funny guy. He's really, constantly laughing at himself, which I just really appreciate. And again, that was part of the lesson of just like, don't ever take yourself too seriously. Always laugh at yourself.
Yeah.
And he really did. He really did. Like there was just like, and Laura Linney did as well. Interestingly enough, it was like they both had this thing of just like, you know, if they weren't feeling a take, it was just like, okay, and that was some bad acting. Caliber saying that, you know what I mean? It's just like, oh, that's really amazing.
I feel like it also, as a creative person, you know, because you have all this responsibility, you know, but you also have to be in that creative space. When you keep it kind of limber,
right?
You know, more stuff flows through. It's a lot easier. It's a lot easier. You know, it's rather than me being like all intense about going on stage. It's like, we're just cracking jokes backstage and like shooting the shit. And then you're just called out and then you just go up and you just do your set and just have a good time, you know?
Yeah, totally. But you know, it's so interesting because, you know, on sets, so often the tone of the set is really like from the top down, right? So the people with the most power, if they are really big egos or if they're like really stressed out or if they're like just shitty, you know, they treat people like shit.
Then
that starts to filter down and you find that there's just tension on set. I'm like a sponge. Like I just soak up other people's energy. So if there's tension, I'll find myself getting tight in my body and I'm just like, you know what I mean? So it's so refreshing to be on a set where someone like Jason Bateman, who's like, you know, he's the most powerful person on that set.
Sure.
As a producer on the show as well, and someone who was really involved early on, and he's laughing nonstop. So you can relax, you know, even though it's an intense shoot and you're moving quickly and you're doing all these things, you can relax and you don't have to worry and people are generally relaxed and having fun and, you know.
It goes back to the point about everything trickles from the top. Right? Yeah. Everything trickles from the top, right? Yeah. If you have shitty people sitting up top, it's going to be a garbage set. If it's like awesome, fun people, it's going to be an awesome, fun set. Like that's what it's going to be. Speaking of shitty people, I've had various female directors on here, and I love talking to them about this. I mean, look, it's hard enough to navigate your way as a female in the world, but then you put yourself in a space of Hollywood and then in a position of director. I mean, you have, I feel, pretty beautifully kind of navigated your way, mainly because you've also had a very unique and a very, you know, very, very clear kind of storytelling that you wanted to do. So people knew, like, okay, this is what Shireen is about. Like, Shireen is telling this story. We get it. We get it where she comes from. For you, when you go on sets, besides the ones you experience in Ozark, has it been where you go on sets and male or even female, you know, lead actresses or actors are just like, it's a first-time director. I don't need to. Whatever. You don't have power. I do.
Yeah, I definitely have had that. I've had that experience. I've had it on sets. I've had it in writers' rooms. I've had it in meetings. I've had it in the hiring process. I mean, it's really fucked up. And it's interesting too, because people always ask me, oh, what's it like to be a woman director in the Arab world? Like, what's it like when you work there? And I'm like, you know, I've only been treated with the utmost respect as a woman director in the Arab world.
Mm.
As a woman, that's a different story. You know,
oh, exactly.
As a woman director.
Yes.
I am like treated like I am like, by the way, like a, like Palestinian and Arab directors, I think it's like 50-50. There are like as many women directors in the Arab world as there are men. Like it's ludicrous how many women directors there are in the Arab world. It's literally crazy.
That's amazing.
But yeah, in this country, I've had a lot of really crazy experiences and definitely a lot of attitude and people testing me. Like I once showed up on a set and an actress.
Very established actress?
Very established actress. Very much tested me from the moment I arrived. It was questioning where the camera was questioning the camera move, asked to see playback at Video Village. It was literally my first day of shooting. It was like my first scene. And I handle these things very well because I'm sort of like, I don't care who you are. I'm here doing my job. And I'm going to listen to you and accommodate you. And we're going to work together, but I'm also going to share my opinion and be opinionated. And I'm not going to allow you to like make me shrink. Like that's just not who I am. I don't shrink.
You're the captain of the ship.
Yeah. But a lot of women direct, like a lot of women in that kind of situation would, you know, cause it is quite intimidating. And I totally, I have a bit of an opposite reaction where like the rebel in me comes out and I'm like, you will not shrink me. You know,
I will pull up my lasso.
I know. It's like the Palestinian in me. I'm like, I'm going to box
it. Yes.
I'm here to defend myself.
That's the Palestinian in you for sure, Shireen.
But it was interesting because at one point I apparently passed the test. And to pass the test, I had to be a combination of strong, opinionated, but willing to accommodate and listen. Which I naturally did. And then apparently I passed the test. And then later the script supervisor, who was a woman, said to me, I just want you to know that she never does that with men. She has never done that with the women directors on the show. And I was like,
that is so disappointing, Shireen.
I know.
It's really disappointing. That's really shitty. I mean, you know, that goes back to that internalized misogyny. It's not just the men. Women have it too.
I know. They really do. Women definitely have it too, for sure. I was just up for actually a big, a big indie film starring like a big name actress. And it was between me and someone else. And I never really knew who the other person was. I just had between me and someone else. And the producers and financiers wanted me. I had like three different interviews with them and they wanted me and they were apparently fine. And I had a call with the actress and it went really well. And then I was suddenly hearing that the producers and financiers were fighting for me. And I was like, well, if you're fighting for me, but you're financing the whole movie.
Yeah.
Fighting. Yeah. And I was like, oh, they're fighting the actress.
Yeah.
And then I heard that they hired a white man who was the other person who was up for the gig, who's like actually been around for a lot longer than me and all of that. But I was like, it's so interesting to me that it was it came down to a woman's decision, you know, but this is the kind of thing that just, I feel like happens a lot.
You know, Shireen, one of the things that I do, not just as a stand-up comic, but as a producer, I put on a lot of big shows in LA and also in New York. My number one key thing every time it has to be all women.
Yeah.
It has to be all women. They have to be all women.
Yeah.
Middle Eastern. We did Arab Girls Night out here. Packed. Sold out.
That's awesome.
Ladies losing their minds. Losing their goddamn minds. All Arab female comics. Yes. Yes. Oh my God, we've never been to a show like that. Exactly. We need this. I need to showcase and put forward these amazing, incredible talent because the comedy clubs aren't giving us those breaks. So fuck it. I'll just fucking create a platform for all of us.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's so great.
I mean, good for you, man. That shit disappoints me. It disappoints. It really disappoints me.
Yeah. No, it's really, it is really interesting. Women are definitely part of the patriarchy. You know, it's not, it is not a gender divide. It's really like, it's a system that has just brainwashed a lot of fucking people. And it doesn't matter what gender you are.
Listen, 53% of white women voted for Trump. So let's not forget that. Right? That's a hard number. Like, don't forget that, right? The one where like, yeah, he can grab me by the pussy. It's just
Oh God. Oh, that was so horrible. I can't believe that a woman would say that. I remember seeing those like videos and like, why? I don't get it. I don't understand.
I'm like, he can't grab you by the pussy. You have no thigh gap. He can't literally get it. What are you talking about?
There's nothing to grab.
He's got to, you know how much fat I got to get through even through my own? You can't even grab your own pussy. You know how difficult it is? Come on, stop it. But yeah, that's a real thing. You know, we had a women's march take place in Pakistan, and the older ladies, were shaming the younger ladies.
Oh.
And saying, this is not what freedom is about. I don't want you going out there. All they were wearing were jeans and just a top. Oh, that is not. And I was like, could tell, with all due respect, shut the fuck up. Nobody needs your shit. Listen, you maybe have another 20 years to live. You're probably going to die soon. Shut the fuck up. We're the ones carrying the fucking future. We're the ones raising the children. Shut up. You know?
Right.
Did Jordan have a women's march?
No, I don't think so. No.
That's another thing right there.
No, my mom and sister live there. I feel like I would have heard about that. But no, so wait, did this happen? Obviously it's COVID now, so nobody, I don't think anybody's having.
Yeah, no. This is like last year.
Last year, okay. No.
Yeah. Oh, can't take it to the streets. Why the fuck not? We're fucking your asses whooped every day. We're being told we have no representation in legislation. Nobody acknowledges us when they make rules and pass this fucked up Wahhabi laws telling us that we have to consistently cover ourselves and that, you know, there was a rule in Pakistan that if a woman gets raped, she needs 4 male witnesses to verify her rape. 4 male witnesses. If you are a fucking male witness, what the fuck you doing fucking witnessing it? Wouldn't you stop the rape?
Yeah, right. Oh my God. That's just horrific. Yeah, no, we have a lot of work to do, Mona. We have a lot of work to do. Not just over there, over here. I mean, it's exhausting being a woman and a woman of color, especially right now, you know, it's like,
Jesus Christ, you know, and you know what kills me sometimes is that your own men or even your own women try to like fight you and try to, you're just I'm fighting for all of us. This is not for me. This is for all of us. I do this for all of us. Like, come on. Work with me. I had some ladies show up to a show I did here. 300 Indian and Pakistani women showed up to the show, right? Packed to the front.
Crazy.
It was incredible, right? They show up, and the very same day, some of the older Pakistani ladies took it upon themselves to go on Facebook and comment how disappointed they were in the show. While everybody had a grand old fucking time. Because why? I told a story, which is a true story, about me performing the Holy Pilgrimage in Saudi Arabia and shitting my pants as an 11-year-old. I talked about shitting my pants. Oh, it was so offensive. Because
oh, God.
As I shit my pants, I didn't say anything against the faith. I just talk about shit in my pants. That's what this world is about. And these bitches couldn't keep it to themselves. So yeah. The best part was when they started talking shit, all the younger ladies came in and they were like, oh, you women. Oh, you started already? Oh, somebody puts out a good thing and you have got to come and knock that shit down. So that was the great part where a lot of the younger people were stepping in and they're like, this is fucked up. Like, really, just shut up. Shut your mouth. Just sit on the side.
Yeah.
Don't you have an arthritis medication to take? Your blood pressure must be shooting up. Fucking sit on the side. It's exhausting. It's fucking exhausting, Shereen.
Yeah.
By the way,
I wouldn't trade it for the world, though.
I wouldn't trade it for the world either.
No, yeah.
I wouldn't either. You know, Shereen, I know we went a little bit over time. Thank you for being.
That's okay. It was so great to talk to you.
Yes.
I enjoyed it so much.
Thank you. Me too. This was such a great conversation.
Yeah, it was.
Where can we follow you, Shereen? Where can we follow you?
On Instagram, Twitter, at Shereen Diabas.
Which is? Last name? How do you spell it?
D-A-B as in boy, I-S.
That's not your married name. That's your...
No, it's my... I'm not very conventional in that way.
Oh, shit. Okay, Shereen.
Yeah, this is my name. My Palestine.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, there's a female... There's a comic here, Monrock. She's great. She's Indian. And she makes this great joke that women only have two options. You only take your father's name or your husband's name. You don't really have a name for yourself. Which is such a great and amazing point. So if I adopt children, I'm going to make sure that they have my first and last name.
That's great.
I'm going to friggin' make sure of that. Like you have more. So when I die, you better carry this fucking name. You better carry it. I will haunt you in your dreams. I will haunt you. Like, take that last name.
I think that's the right approach right there.
You got to take my name. You got to take my first name. Like, Jesus Christ. You know? It's ridiculous.
You guys do the thing, because Arabic culture, like, you don't give kids middle names. Your dad's first name automatically becomes your middle name.
Oh.
My middle name is Nazee.
Oh.
Nazee Diabas. Although I have, like, more like five names, if you really want to know. Like, it's just it's a lot of names.
Got it. Women in our family do not have middle names.
Okay.
They can't afford it. It's too expensive. It's only the boys. Only the boys get the middle names. We don't get the middle names.
Wait, how is it too expensive?
I was being sarcastic.
Like, what does it cost money to register a name?
Apparently. I was like, why don't I get a middle name? Why do my brothers get middle names? I don't get a middle name.
It's really funny because my husband, who's Iranian, also, like, they don't have middle names. And I was like, is that a cultural thing? He was like, I don't know.
I think it might be a cultural thing. Yeah. For us, it's more about the women don't get it. The men, because the women are going to leave anyways. They're going to take the husband's name.
Right. And it's so crazy. That's so crazy that the women are just, you know, I have four sisters. So we're like five girls.
Oh, wow.
They're basically five rocking women now.
I love that. Love
and
it.
And my mom, as the matriarch growing up, we were just a feminist household. Like, literally, my dad was like, I can't take this anymore.
He's outnumbered. Dude, he's outnumbered. He's not going to win this year.
Massively outnumbered. But basically, you know, the reason my parents have five kids is because they tried five times for a boy.
Of course they did.
So, I mean, how important that tradition of carrying the name is. So, yeah, let's just start giving the name to
the daughters.
The girls. Yeah, the daughters.
And whoever carries it, listen, it's not a guarantee that you'll have a son and then he'll have kids and the name dies.
Right.
So diversify your portfolio. Give it to the daughters too. That's what I'm talking about, you know?
I think that's right on.
Diversify your freaking portfolio. I'm the opposite of you. I grew up with four older brothers, a very alpha dad.
Four brothers, man. What was that like?
So much fucking testosterone, Shereen.
Oh, man.
Let me tell you something. I didn't know I was a girl till I was 8.
Oh, wow.
My mom had to sit me down, and I was like, why is it that when I pee standing up, it's messy, and when they do it, it's not? What is happening here? Is this something I don't know about?
Did I miss that day of school where they taught us how to do that?
What happened? Is it my target practice is not good? Maybe I'm not aiming right? Like, what's happening here? And my mom was just like, no, you don't have the same weaponry that they do. I was like, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean by that? Like, what do you mean? And it was really, can I tell you something? I was pretty devastated when I learned I was a girl. Pretty devastated. Yeah, because I saw what was happening to women around me. They were being.
Right.
You know, they were being told that they were. But for me, I think what happened with me, because I saw boys in my family just do whatever. So I was also doing whatever.
Right.
And, you know, so I was a tomboy. Cool. Yeah.
Which is a cool guy, by the way.
Say that again.
I was a tomboy, too.
Yeah.
I tried to be my dad's son.
Yeah.
I could be a boy.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I can tuck these titties in. Look, check it out.
Totally. They're not that big. They're not that noticeable. Oh,
Marie, let me tell you something. When I moved at 15, I had no titties. And when I moved to America and started drinking that milk and that started eating that food, my titties just went.
Wow.
In like 1.5 years. And my mom came and she was visiting. And my mom was like, what happened to your chest? I was like, what do you mean? She's like, what happened? It's too big. Cover it. And I was just like walking. I was like, oh, shit. I got to like cover these like up. And as an adult, I'm like, fuck it. People pay for these. What?
People pay for them. They do. I don't know what happened in my family because my sisters have like massive boobs.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't know if, because I was a dancer growing up, and I was like a bit of a contortionist, and I was always like rolling over my chest, doing these contortionist moves, so yeah. I smashed them down or something, you know, they're just.
I don't think that's how it works, Shereen.
But... I mean, they fit really nicely in my hands, but they're not like, you know, my sisters are like what you're talking about, you know, or just like. But interestingly enough, like, I was the tomboy growing up, so I think I also would have been horrified if I would have, like, you know, like, I don't know if I just...
You'd be wearing a lot of...
I did my growth as an anorexic when I was 12.
You'd be wearing a lot of baggy t-shirts, let's just put it that way.
Right. I'd be wearing probably, like, I mean, because I was, like, literally rolling over my chest doing these, like, weird things... Yeah, I would have been really wearing a lot of sports bras. I would have had the uniboob with the sports bras, you know?
Well, listen, if our men can have unibrow, why can't the women have unibrow? Come on.
I know. It's
almost fair. Yeah, no, I think for me it was something that I was very ashamed of, you know? Because I was made to feel this shame. Like, my mom was like, oh, my God, cover it up. This is awful. My mom belongs to the itty-bitty titty committee, so she couldn't understand how the fuck I was rocking.
Like, where did those come from?
Exactly. She's like, well, and you know what she tells me now? She's like, that is from your father's side. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm like, they got rock going on. I was like, you got small titties, bitch. I was like, don't put that shit on me.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I got good titties. Like, I'm good. I'm really good right now. Yeah, my mom is, I think she still is like a little, where she's always just like covered it up. And I'm like, I'm trying to like show a little more cleave now. The titties are going. They're gonna fucking go.
No, let me enjoy them. Gotta let them go. And you know what? Right now in quarantine, it is all about the titties being free.
Right.
It's all about, you know what? People are gonna look back one day at the bra and it's gonna be like the corset is to us. Like, how did women wear that? Why? That is so uncomfortable. Like, isn't it time that we moved on from the bra to find something just a little bit more flexible?
Agreed. I agree. I wouldn't even mind like a guy that I like and have his hands molded and just have cup like under my shirt. Like, I'm just like, oh, these are so soft, like made of rubber, just rubbers holding your titties up all day. Nice.
Something like that, right? I mean, can you trademark that? You know, copyright it or whatever you gotta do to like get that shit moving? Start manufacturing it.
Let me get working on that right now. This is all these great ideas. See, this is what happens when great minds come together.
Totally.
Like, the titty ideas, like, all of this is just coming through.
Heads, man.
This is amazing. I know it's late for you, so I'm not going to keep you any further. Can you please come back again? Because this was so much
fun. This was so much fun. Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it so much.
You are awesome. Are you coming to LA anytime soon? Are you coming to LA?
You know, I was supposed to come there, and I have no idea now with the whole, you know, situation that we're in. I usually spend a lot more time there. But next time I'm there, I will definitely hit you up because I would love to see you.
Yes, me too. I would love to. Yeah. I would love to go have some. I don't know, some tea or some dinner or something. I don't know.
So we'll be great.
We'll go to Tejer Angeles. We'll go to Tejer Angeles.
We could do that. Totally.
Yeah, we'll totally go to Tejer Angeles. Great. Thank you very much, my friend. Thank you so much
for
joining.
Thank you.
I will see you soon. Thanks.
Yeah.
Bye. That was a wonderful and amazing Shireen Diabis. I hope I said that. I think I said that right. You guys, this was such a fun chat. I hope you enjoyed it. I definitely did. If you haven't subscribed to my channel, it would mean the world to me if you do so. It would be awesome. Until Monday with a brand new guest, I love you. Thank you always for tuning in and supporting. Have a lovely weekend. Stay safe out there. Have a good night.